Joseph.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo, good morning, man.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I've got a little bit of a tummy ache. And I think I drank too much coffee.
Man, I am so thrilled to be here this morning with you for so many different reasons. First of all, just being in your presence.
Agreed, man.
It's awesome.
Always a good thing.
We got a bright, shiny morning here.
Enough. Yep.
In Las Vegas, Nevada, as we are enjoying making this content, hanging out, gearing up for the Las Vegas Pipe Show. But man, we are going to be talking about some, I don't want to get ahead of the game here, but I'm really excited for this topic. And
yes, you are.
Looking forward to jumping into it. But first, man, we got to give a major shout out to a new pilgrim who is supporting this show for the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. Joining at the pilgrim level, we have Alexander Stewart.
Stewart.
It's Alexander Stewart. There we go. Got it.
Alexander Stewart. Thank you so much, man, for joining us on the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. You literally are a part of why we're able to make this thing happen every week. So thank you so much,
man. I'm very excited for this week. You know, we teed it up last week. This is something we very rarely, although we've done it more recently, have we done like mini series back to back,
especially back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we've explored that more probably past 2 or 3 years maybe, but yeah,
I'd say even just in the last past year, well, maybe a little bit longer than a year. Cause we did the training your palate.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which was like the 12 part series of training your palate. Which was, I mean, a huge hit. That was a big success.
Yeah, proud of that.
And we've done some other small ones here and there. But one of the reasons we're doing this kind of back-to-back, kind of a return of the Pirates and Pipe Tobacco is, you know, just shamelessly to promote The Pirate's Daughter, an audio drama, an immersive audio drama that I am working to get off the ground. I want to encourage our listeners to head to findeversale.com. Even if you don't support the project, head over there. Take a look, listen to the video. It explains kind of the history of where the project
came
from.
Yeah.
Would love your support. Honestly, I would consider it a personal favor if y'all would support this project, because without y'all, it's not going to happen. I mean, that's just the plain, honest truth. Without y'all, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
If you are so willing and able to support the project there, then it's findeversale.com is the place to do it. And yeah, but man, today we're not talking about pirates of fiction. We are talking about a pirate of history. And yet, one history that is surrounded and shrouded in mystery, fantasy, and lore within itself. We are talking about the pirate. When you average Joe on the street, think pirate, the one that comes to mind. I would argue the one pirate whose name, or at least one of his names, is known by every single individual, regardless of how interested you are in pirate lore or otherwise. That's right. We're talking about the Kal-El of the Justice League, the top tier, the one, the Rock. I'm talking about Blackbeard.
We all have heard of Blackbeard.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's certainly in Western civilization, like in, or, you know, at least the English speaking world, like we know when we think of piracy, certainly during the golden age of piracy in that time period, like we don't even know who he is, yeah, but we know the name Blackbeard.
Absolutely.
We know the name
Blackbeard. So it's interesting because when we started the Pirates and Pipe Tobacco series years ago, you know, I intentionally did not do Blackbeard because there's kind of like a low hanging fruit nature of that.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody knows who Blackbeard is. And yet there's a lot of stories about Blackbeard.
Blackbeard was the basic white girl of
pumpkin
spice latte of the pirate world.
I
he's wearing his Ugg boots and
how dare you? How dare you? But you're not totally incorrect from a certain point of view.
It's but, fantastic.
But no, I mean, it's the name that
can
everybody
I speak
knows.
To the manager.
You take that DK. Well, you know, actually, that's
a
joke in the future. Never mind. Anyway, point is, man, we were talking about Blackbeard. Now, you know, like I said, I intentionally kind of saved him. I knew I wanted to talk to about him during a special occasion with this kind of promotion with the findeversale.com and the Pirate's Daughter. It was the perfect time to do so. And so here we are talking about Edward Teach, or is it Edward Thatch? Because right off the bat, the mystery around Blackbeard kind of begins with some of the misinformation that surrounds who was Blackbeard.
Gosh, these pirates have a lot of that element to all their stories.
Absolutely.
These are real historical characters that like can be verified by official documents.
Yes.
And yet there's so much mystery.
Well, and you got to think about it. We live in a digital age where all of that stuff is like backed up and stored and in databases and everything else. And so like finding somebody's identity is relatively easy, relatively quick. Even you look on Netflix and you see all of these like, you know, Tinder Swindler and all of these documentaries on these individuals who like recreates their identity. And yet you can still track them, you know, like, you know, even like casual people who have been spurned can track them on Google and get to the bottom of it.
Sure. Yeah.
This was not the case for, you know, Edward Teach's Day or Edward Thatch. Again, it is highly contested. You have people that swear by the notion that his name was Thatch because of documents that exist referencing Edward Thatch. But then you also have those that swear that it was Teach because of documents that listed him as Teach.
So he had different names, and I guess they have enough confidence to know that this is the same person.
Enough confidence to know it's the same person. There's enough kind of information that kind of congeal around him to the point where, and this is where we're going to fall into the allegedly portion of his history.
Yeah.
Because there is, you know, there is kind of this piecing together from what we know of Teach / Thatch of the Edward variety. That
can we pick one this episode?
I would like to go with Teach if that's all right with
you. Yeah, that's good.
Interestingly enough, Thatch was the first one that I was introduced to as a kid because in Disney's Blackbeard's Ghost.
Is that the name they used?
Yeah, they used Thatch and they referred to him as Thatch. And then later when I heard him referred to as Teach in a different media, I was super confused.
Yeah.
And therein lies the point. But yes, for the purpose of this podcast,
Edward Teach.
Edward Teach is the one that we're going with, a.k.a. Blackbeard. He was born in the late 1600s, early 1700s, as many in his fraternity were. Approximately Bristol is where he is kind of placed to a wealthy family. However, he gave up his family fortune to his mother and his sister when his father died, and he went off to fight in the War of Spanish Succession as a privateer.
Wow.
Now I didn't
realize that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, we talked about privateers before. These are kind of, they're like sanctioned, they're like government sanctioned pirates, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Hired guns, if you will, you know, that kind of thing. But he did so out the gate, as opposed to some of the other individuals we've talked about.
Had spent some time in the military or the Navy or something.
Exactly.
Or were former pirates that had been forgiven and all that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was not necessarily his case. So he was actually a privateer until he came under the command of one Benjamin Hornigold. Now, longtime listeners of Country Squire Radio may recall Benjamin Hornigold was, I want to say, the second Pirates and Pipe Tobacco episode we ever did.
Yep.
Hornigold is kind of one of these OGs. Like, literally, Blackbeard was second in command to this guy. He was the man that kind of trained Blackbeard. And for those that are so inclined, and as a bit of a language warning about this, go to YouTube and look up Benjamin Hornigold from Black Sails. There is an epic pipe smoking scene where he is sitting down. We actually included an edited clip of that, of him smoking his pipe, telling off this dude who's coming up and like saying he's going to get him off his chair. And he's like, you know, if this dude, and he goes through the entire history of like this chair and how he took it off this prize and he had to fight this guy for it. And he tells his little, you know, his like a stable boy or whatever, his assistant guy. He's like, if this dude ever comes up here and tries to do anything with my chair, you have my permission to shoot him where he stands. And they're like good friends, you know? And so it's great. Also, the guy that comes up and like tries to intimidate Benjamin Hornigold to add some flavor to it. If the hurricane was a pirate, This is the guy. You need to see this because it's like, it even looks like him is the crazy thing.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Anyway, so there's that. A fantastic pipe smoking scene featuring Benjamin Hornigold and Black Sails. I highly recommend it. But this was the man, Benjamin Hornigold, that trained Blackbeard. And Blackbeard served under him, not in the Spanish War of Succession, but specifically as a pirate and kind of entered into piracy in that way. This was in 1717. All right. So they're going around. They're you know, doing their thing, their pirate things. They're already kind of in kind of a top tier recognizable group sailing with Benjamin Hornigold. Blackbeard comes across another pirate, the gentleman pirate, Steve Bonnet. All right. Have you ever heard of Steve Bonnet before?
I don't think we've discussed him.
We have not discussed him.
If we have,
it's
been very brief. Yeah.
Much like how a lot of different pirates popped up in the Calico Jack episode.
Yeah.
Blackbeard has a lot of individuals that surround him. The difference is, unlike Calico Jack, Blackbeard was BA. He was like, you know, he knew what he was doing. Right.
Right.
Unlike, by the way, Steve Bonnet. So Steve Bonnet was called the gentleman pirate because this dude just was kind of like a pirate fanboy. He wanted to be a pirate, but like he didn't want to make his mama mad. You understand what I'm saying? So what this dude did is he went around and he found a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, and he did something that wasn't often the case in piracy. He paid them a salary. Wow. And he's like, sail with me under my pirate flag and we will go around being swashbucklers, don't you know? And we would literally, he paid them a salary because, you know, he wasn't very good at taking prizes. He wasn't very good at the whole piracy thing.
That's wild.
But he just really wanted to be a pirate. So lo and behold,
was he the Paris Hilton of pirates? Like he actually can't do anything, but he has a lot of people that follows him that he basically pays?
Something like that. I think for for him, he's more of like a fancy boy who's from like, you know, a rich family.
A dandy.
And, you know, like a certain individual that you and I were kind of talking about recently who's kind of like, you know, comes from money, goes around kind of like, you know, as if this is his life, but it's not really his life.
Right.
But the difference is this one wanted to go out and set sail. But again, he didn't want to make his mama mad. So he did pay all of these individuals to do all the rough work for him. What, lo and behold, what does he do? He just so happens to come across one of the most notorious up-and-coming pirates of his era, Blackbeard, who comes on, takes his ship essentially, and says, all right, you know, you're sailing with me in Hornigold now, and how about I be the captain and you no longer be the captain?
Right.
And Steve's like, how dare you? I mean, after all, I wanted to be the captain, but I guess I could learn under you, Blackbeard. That would be amazing. And the crew is all like, oh my gosh, yes, please. Can we get a captain that knows what he's doing?
Kick Mr. Dandy out of here.
Instantly, Bonnet's ship, the Revenge, becomes an extremely successful pirate vessel.
Interesting.
They take upwards of like 15 ships in the matter of just a few months, all off the coast of the American coast. And this is where we really see Captain Blackbeard, or Captain Teach essentially, really come into his own as a pirate. Now, it's worth noting that in like modern culture, there's a very popular show right now called Our Flag Means Death that has reimagined the Blackbeard Bonnet relationship more as like a romantic relationship.
Of course.
That's not the way it was. Blackbeard was kind of like a notorious womanizer, which isn't a good thing, but I mean, that's just historically accurate.
Right, sure.
But at the same time, is he a womanizer if he keeps on marrying these women? I mean, like, Yeah, it actually does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Blackbeard notoriously had several wives over the course of a very short amount of time.
Okay.
So, you know, he'd go from port to port, but I mean, like, you know, he'd get married, he'd make it legal, and then he'd, you know, bounce and make it legal somewhere else.
Wow.
Yeah, this was his way. Anyway, so they go around, he's very successful at this point, and is coming across what is going to famously be his largest prize, which was the La Concorde, which was a French slaving ship, which he took, outfitted with 40 guns and renamed as the Queen Anne's Revenge.
Oh, wow.
Now, this was already a large French vessel. And this is kind of interesting for Blackbeard because he historically kind of went after Spanish ships more so than French ships.
Yeah, sure.
But man, this was a big one. Like, this is one of the largest ships that he had ever come across.
This is a big catch.
One of the biggest ones that any pirate had ever kind of come across and successfully captured. And to fit it out with 40 guns, we're now talking about essentially a floating fortress. The Queen Anne's Revenge is probably the most famous pirate ship of all other pirate ships.
What a great time.
It's fantastic. Of course, you know, referencing his time in the War of Spanish Secession and everything.
Sure.
So the Queen Anne's Revenge became this extremely notable ship throughout the Gulf of Mexico, where the Spanish started giving him the name El Grande Diablo. So not only was he going under Captain Teach and occasionally Blackbeard, but El Grande Diablo.
Like the giant devil.
Well, and we'll talk about it kind of as we get to the end. But I mean, like Blackbeard was aware of the importance of narrative and like presentation. He was as much a brand enthusiast, if you will, a marketer.
He cultivated.
He really understood that you were what you were perceived to be more so than you actually are.
That's true.
It's interesting because
Yeah, in the eyes of other people. Yeah.
There's conflicting narratives around Blackbeard historically. Some paint him to be a tyrant, and I'll explain that a little bit later. And then some kind of point out, like, in the vast majority of his time as a pirate, he never really killed anybody. They didn't really murder anybody. They didn't take prisoners or anything of that nature. There wasn't, like, he wasn't this butcherer that he's sometimes portrayed to be.
Right.
And to some extent, that may be because he was so good at communicating this narrative of a fearful individual, maybe even larger than life, maybe even demonic, speaking into this El Grande Diablo.
And then people just followed him.
And people followed it. When you are able to strike fear, you no longer have to spend blood to take a prize.
Sure.
Because if they're afraid of what you could do, they'll just go ahead and give it to you without you having to do anything.
Wow.
And so he was a genius in many regards. He was a tactical genius in the way that he was able to take ships, but he was also a genius in the way that he was able to let his narrative and name precede him so that he could avoid unnecessary battle whenever possible and yet still take some sizable prizes. South Carolina, one of the largest and kind of most notable points in his career.
Yeah.
He holds, well, okay, let's just put it this way. So I mentioned, you know, he doesn't really take prisoners, but let's just say that he did take a hostage.
Okay.
A notable hostage. A city hostage. He held an entire city hostage for 6 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the Queen Anne's Revenge is essentially like this massive floating fortress. He parks it outside the city, stops all trade in and out. And what he's demanding of the city, which by the way, this doesn't happen all that often, right? Like typically you're taking prizes on the seas. And as we talked about with Rackham, if you do something in front of a city, that's typically end game. They're going to like,
well, yeah, that's,
we know where you're at. You're right there. We can send all of our stuff.
We'll just come get you.
Yeah, right? Exactly. No, this wasn't Blackbeard. Nobody was willing to challenge the Queen Anne's Revenge to get any close to it. 40 cannons. Boom, 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 boom.
That is
you're
crazy.
Dead before you get an entire shot off.
Right.
And so he's got cannons facing the sea. He's got cannons facing the city. He's holding the city hostage for 6 days because he's not after gold. He's not after money. He's after medical supplies. One of the things that you know, pirates had to face constantly was the threat of, you know,
disease.
Dying. You're literally traveling all over the place.
Scurvy.
Exactly. And so he was holding him hostage for medical supplies. And again, I think this also shows that he's a forward-thinking individual in his era, that he is not just looking for the payday. He's also looking for sustainability. You know, like little, like literally life sustaining in himself and in his crew as they kind of go along. So this adventure of holding the city hostage for 6 days began to ruffle some jimmies, if you will, for one, Steve Bonnet on his crew, who's like, oh, my mama is not going to be very pleased with the fact that I held an entire city hostage. Perhaps it's time that we part ways, Blackbeard. Blackbeard, who's like, oh, you're still here. Is kind of like, it's kind of like, yeah, man, this has been fun. That's cool. Hey, thanks for, you know, giving me money for no apparent reason. Sure, go. By the way, you're probably not going to last long without me around, but
right.
Good luck with that. And of course, Steve Bonnet was captured and put on trial and hung 4 months later.
Wow.
Now, I want to stop here for a second. Because Steve Bonnet is a very interesting character by contrast to Blackbeard.
Yeah.
Theoretically, these were both individuals that came from some kind of like wealth and establishment and money and, you know, privilege and prominence of some sort. Right. But the difference is that Blackbeard kind of gave that all off and like kind of found his own way.
And Bonnet wanted to have both.
He wanted to have both.
Right.
And that was a very threatening narrative to the establishment, to the civilized world, that there was somebody who thought that they could have both, that they could be this kind of out there like criminal, but still maintain some sort of genteel nature
respected
to them
by society and maintain that upward mobility and all that kind of stuff.
Massive threat to the establishment.
Interesting.
Massive threat
really
to
thought about that.
Society. Yeah. In A General History of Pirates, which is, of course, Charles Johnson's book, Captain Charles, you know, quote unquote, Captain Charles Johnson's book.
Yeah.
When he goes into Bonnet's history, one of the majority of the chapter on Steve Bonnet goes to his trial. And it's specifically going into how the courts hammered into him, not just the fact that he committed these crimes, but also the fact that he did this as an abomination to God, because as somebody who is a civilized individual from like prim and proper, you know, plantation, good, you know, quote unquote, good plantation owning people.
Right.
How
right.
dare you offend God this way? So I have to read this. This is the Lord Chief Justice's speech upon his proclamation sentence of Major Steed Bonnet. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I am going to read some of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Major Steed Bonnet, you stand here convicted upon two indictments of piracy, one by the verdict of jury and the other by your own confession. You know that the crimes you have committed are evil in themselves and contrary to the light and the law of nature, as well as the law of God, by which you are commanded that you shall not steal. Exodus 20:15. And the Apostle St. Paul expressly affirms that thieves shall not inherit the kingdom of God, 1 Corinthians 6:10. But the theft, you have added a greater sin, which is murder. How many have you killed of those that resisted you in commenting on your former piracies? I know not. But this we all know, that besides the wounded, you killed no less than 18 persons out of those that were sent by lawful authority to suppress you and put a stop to those rapnians as you daily acted. There's a lot of like old English words in here that I don't really recognize.
Yeah, I'm eating this up.
Thing is, so they go through And I can't even count the number of scripture that is referenced throughout this aggressive speech against
right.
him.
And this is the jurist speaking.
This
right?
is the Lord Chief Justice.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, for example, he says, "For it is the voice of nature confirmed by the law of God that whoever sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed." Genesis 9:6. He's like straight up trying to Jesus juke this. Like, he's like literally putting yeah. like the verses in. As he's like going after him, like, you know, he quotes Revelations. He quotes Psalms. He quotes Corinthians.
That's amazing.
It's like, yeah, it's like all over the map. He's like hammering in. And it's not just to like make Steve Bonnet, who's probably wetting himself right now because right. Mama has very, very displeased with him at this point.
Right.
But it's also to send a message to the civilized world that this, you cannot do this. You cannot exist as a pirate and be, you know, considered civilized. And right. so I just think it's fascinating, again, that this character is so intertwined with Blackbeard, who himself was kind of seen as the devil. Like, so you have the Steve Bonnet who was corrupted by the devil in this, you know, civilized portrayal of their time together.
To me, it just seems like a very unwitting accomplice to Blackbeard. And then, of course, you know, when you have this grandiose speech that this official is making.
Oh, and it goes on. I can't read it all, but yeah.
but it's really amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it's like you can just picture this person like kind of already looking over towards the gallows, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, just like, okay, I'm out. I'm done with this thing. Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just
really fascinating.
So yeah, so that's the end of Steve Bonnet. But meanwhile, Blackbeard is doing quite well for himself because he's pretty good at being a pirate here. That being said, we've talked about, of course, about our boy Woods Rogers and what his right. whole tactics were and everything else. And it's interesting because I've talked about how Woods Rogers and the Pardon was wildly successful at ending piracy. And yet it also has these scragglers, right? These people that took the Pardon, but then did they, you know, like,
right,
like, you know,
right.
and Blackbeard finds himself now thinking like, okay, this Pardon is going on right here. We've been having some fun off the coast of South Carolina. That was pretty, you know, pretty awesome. He's like, hey, I got an idea. Everybody, y'all want to like retire for a bit? And I was like, yeah, I mean, you know, we can retire for a bit. We're doing pretty good. We've got a lot of prizes. We got a lot of money. It's like, okay, cool. In North Carolina, there's the city of Bath. I think we get washed up there, but I'm not entirely sure what they're doing with it. Why don't we go? It's kind of a small town. By the way, the governor there, we've been kind of writing each other and he's going to hook us up. I'm just saying he's going to like, we're going to be okay. And so they go in, the governor pardons Blackbeard, his entire crew, and his wow. entire crew kind of add to the population of Bath. This is something that even to this day, North Carolina in that area is very, they celebrate Blackbeard.
They kind of celebrate. This.
Absolutely.
Wow, I was unaware of this. Interesting.
Meanwhile, Blackbeard does set up a camp on kind of like a little island outside of Bath where he continues to find different items while he's out at sea.
And just finds them.
Yeah, it's like Blackbeard, hey buddy, what you doing? Nothing. I'm just chilling. Okay, it looks like you're chilling with like a whole bunch of bushels of sugar that we haven't seen you with before. It's like, oh yeah, these. Yeah, I just found them. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, just
you're
found
not,
them.
You're not using that boat for anything, are you?
It's like, oh, okay. That's the other thing too. You got to think about it. Like Blackbeard come like having a ship outside your port.
Yeah.
As kind of some protection. I mean, it was a good deal.
It's a good arrangement.
And that's the thing. When it's like, okay, Blackbeard, these kind of items that you keep finding, do you want to explain that at all? And he's like, I would love to explain this little cash that I'm going to slip you right here and how that's going to explain. Well, I'm not going to have to explain anything.
Yeah.
And the governor of North Carolina was like, all right. So he was all down with it, or specifically of Bath. And so meanwhile, Blackbeard is continuing his exploits. And one of his favorite things to do was to actually go into the rivers kind of on the coast, you know, like the coast of North Carolina and kind of Virginia kind of neighbor each other. Right.
Sure.
And so he's going through some of these coastal
inlets,
lands.
Yeah.
He had this really fun thing that he would do where he would go up to that area. There were a lot of plantations along that area and you had a lot of sloops that would go back and forth and trade and they were easy money. So he would raid these sloops. When things got too hot, he would do this awesome thing where he would go to the plantations and he would like basically like take all of the plantation owners and like make them serve him. Which
wow.
was fantastic.
Wow.
And they're like, well, you can't do this. You can't just come into our home and our land and like force us to do your bidding without pay. That's our thing. That's what we do. You know, like it's, it completely, it's like, this creates this massive turmoil. And again, the civilized world is kind of turned topsy-turvy.
Right.
Like, I'm a plantation owner. You can't force me to work against my will. It's like, oh, does that bother you? Do you feel that that's something wrong about that? Of course there's something wrong about that. Does it cause you to reevaluate some of your life decisions? It's like, no.
Why would it?
So Virginia gets a little ticked off that North Carolina is kind of allowing this to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So in, you know, there's kind of some pressure of like, hey, North Carolina, you want to deal with Blackbeard? They're like, no, Blackbeard's fine. Oh, by the way, North Carolina, Governor of North Carolina, what's all this like sugar and like right. stuff? Where'd that come from? I was like, don't worry about it. It's we just found it. You know, we just found it.
Just kind of hanging out.
Yeah, so we just found it. So anyway, finally, Virginia and kind of the lieutenant governor there is like, okay, fine. You know what? Y'all aren't going to deal with them. I'm going to deal with them. He amasses one of the largest hunting fleets to go after Blackbeard.
Wow.
And in November 22nd, 1718, they catch him. And I am going to butcher this name, but off the Isle of Aquacoke is about the best I could.
Hey, sounds great.
Yeah, I literally wrote it phonetically of Aquacoke, like aqua water coke.
O-C-R-A-C-O-K-E.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Blackbeard is totally outmatched, like 3 men to 1. But at the same time, they go out fighting, guns a-blazing. And it is reported that on his body, they found 20 sword slashes and 5 bullets. Blackbeard did not go down without a tremendous, tremendous fight. He famously, his head was cut off of his body after the exchange, and it was hung off the side of the ship that took him out as they sailed back into port.
Back into the harbor.
Communicating to everybody that the devil was dead.
Wow.
A couple of things here, right? Blackbeard is referred to Blackbeard because of his black beard. He literally had this large, like, mane of a beard that identified him, right? He would also take, you know, what do you call those things? A flint and put it inside of his beard, light it on fire, and have kind of like a smoky kind of eeriness that was constantly
smoldering.
On.
Yeah. Again, he was very aware of his image and story and brand.
He was big on intimidation was his main weapon. And yet at the same time, he was known to be decked out as well. He had like 6 or 7 pistols on either side strapped to him. He was a walking fortress in and of himself. The Queen Anne's Revenge, being this floating fortress, was almost like this vessel that embodied who he himself also was embodied, right? Like he was just constantly, you know, gunned up and ready to go at any given
bristling
time.
Bristling with power, indestructible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it just kind of adds to that that imagery. His Jolly Roger, his flag, was of this kind of skeletal devil figure that is piercing a heart, toasting with an hourglass saying that your time is up. Like he wanted to communicate instantly.
Don't mess with me.
Don't mess with Blackbeard. And as we mentioned, he does go out fighting pretty hard.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, like as we kind of evaluate Blackbeard as a whole and this tension that exists, because he did communicate this like beastly energy, right? Like that was something he perpetuated. But at the same time, when we see kind of the ferocity and the fear, we do see that happening at seas, but it was only after he really started disrupting the establishment, right?
Yeah.
Which again, the injustices of the days, the plantation owners were not heroes in this situation. They were in fact villains themselves, right? But they were sanctioned villains. They were like civilized villains, right? Whereas the quote unquote civilized villain of Steve Bonnet was like put to death when the civilized villains of these plantation owners
getting away with this
were
stuff.
Threatened. That's when it's like, well, we have to put a stop to this and we have to destroy Blackbeard.
Wow.
And so I find it very interesting that these two worlds come like both collide in this moment, which like creates this overwhelming aggression towards Blackbeard to take him out. And at the same time, they're also kind of embodied with this individual who is part of his crew in Steve Bonnet.
Pot meets kettle. You know? Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, Blackbeard. Wow. That's Edward Teach.
Man, obviously, you know, we, again, as we discussed at the beginning of the show, we've all heard of this individual. The significance of him, I think for a lot of us is just kind of lost without, you know, engaging it. And I'm so glad we got to. It's really, really great. And golly, what an interesting figure. And I look forward to reading more about him and also, you know, kind of learning more about like how the modern view of him is perceived, you know, like as research is done and all this, like, you know, what you know, what is the modern, you know, understanding of him? That's great. Well done.
You know, it's interesting with after we finished our Mary Read, I had every intention of making sure that I interwove the pipe tobacco throughout his story, because the fact of the matter is Blackbeard does have, like, whenever we see him imagined in pop culture, he's generally with a pipe. I mentioned the Our Flag Means Death.
Yeah.
That's fairly popular on, I think, HBO right now. When you're first introduced to him, he's played by Taika Waititi, and he's sitting there smoking a pipe. You know, like, it's literally this you're, you know, you see this big mane of he's actually kind of more of a gray beard, honestly. And like, he's surrounded by smoke because he's there smoking a pipe. I think it's supposed to be an imagery reference to the fact that he used to light his beard on fire. But I like that they do that. You also see in the game Assassin's Creed, Blackbeard is a massive character in
piece
that
of
game.
That, yeah.
And so, you know, we see him sitting on the beach smoking a pipe or like walking through Nassau smoking a pipe. Typically a church warden or of some sort of kind of clay variant is what you see. And so, yeah. So when you think of Blackbeard, and there's a reason why that we think of pirates and pipe tobacco, right? Like, we see kind of this imagery going together. One is because, you know, pipe tobacco was a massive, you know, quantity of, or a massive item that was a prize to be had when you were taking a vessel.
Right.
But then there's also the aspect that, yes, during that time, sailors were big pipe smokers, and of course, pirates amongst them. And in the modern day imagery of pipedom, Blackbeard and pipe often are seen together when they're explored for more than 2 seconds. If it's just 2 seconds of like, here's an image of Blackbeard, then it's like, here's a guy with a big black beard, and that's right. Blackbeard. But if we spend some time with them, there's always a pipe.
The pipe
involved.
Comes out.
It always comes out. So anyway, I meant to interweave that a little bit more, but I got swept up in the story. Happened with Mary Read as well. I apologize, but yeah.
Oh,
anyway.
That's great. I love it. I love it.
All right, man. Well, you know, one of the things I also love, and one of the things that's never hard to interweave in into the show is our good friends at Missouri Beer Show.
Man, that's right. And of course, as we approach the holidays and man, everyone's thinking about family gatherings at Thanksgiving, Missouri Meerschaum is very much wants to be a part of your Thanksgiving tradition. So from November 23rd to November 29th, they are doing a Thanksgiving promotion on their website. Be sure to check them out and understand all their deals. And go ahead and get your gear in for Missouri Meerschaum to have that Norman Rockwell Thanksgiving yourself. And man, we know you'll be glad you did. So check them out. Go to corncobpipe.com, and they would love to send a quality corncob pipe right to your front door.
And big thanks to our friends at Missouri Meerschaum for sponsoring this show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week coming in from Gabriel Roper. Gabriel, man, he's doing the work this
I know,
us.
Man. Yeah.
Says, hey guys, I've been enjoying my Missouri Meerschaum corn cobs a lot lately, and I'm wondering what y'all do to prep a fresh one for smoking. I didn't enjoy the taste of the stem end charring. the first few smokes, so I drilled it out and put in a pipe mortar composed of activated charcoal, salt, plaster of Paris, and water as a binder. I then shaped the mortar.
The mines of Mortor.
The eye of Mortor. Oh, the eye of Mortor. There you go. Yeah. to advise you've given on what makes a pipe smoke well, the result is really good, but it does take some work and patience. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this method as well and what you do with your cobs. Keep up the good work. I feel blessed by your weekly podcast. Again, that is Gabriel Roper.
Gabriel, thank you so much for writing in. And I love this. What is the whole saying, like necessity and invention or whatever? You know, this is someone that bought a like $12 pipe, if that. And Gabriel was like, no, that's not exactly what I want it to do. So like he created his own proprietary little paste and then drilled it out and then made it do what he wanted it to do. And like that was on a $12 pipe. And my friends, let me introduce you to the quintessential pipe smoker.
Wow, there it is. There it is. Yeah.
I love it, man. It's just so, it's so wonderful. Yeah. So there, new corn cobs, and it's funny, we followed, you know, this is following literally our, you know, segment where we always praise Missouri Meerschaum and thank them for everything they do for us. And, you know, hopefully we give back to them too. It's polarizing. It is a polarizing question on how to break in a corn cob.
Yeah.
Some people prize Missouri Meerschaums because they experience them clean out of the gate. And like they have a taste to them that just it's perfect, you know. And so the break-in time is almost nil for a lot of people. Some people, if you're like me, will experience kind of a vegetal taste the first few. I mean, you're smoking out of a piece of corn.
Right.
You know, and it, so there's a woody vegetable.
As there should be.
You know, that, yeah. You know, it is there. And so if you're like me, you smoke two or three bowls out of it, maybe four, five, and power through.
Right.
And then your pipe is seasoned like any other pipe.
That's what I do too.
Right. Like, it's just, you know, per how the individual reacts to it. And then you've got folks like Gabriel who are like, no. Like, I'm going to modify this corn cob pipe.
Right.
And, you know, drill out the wood insert that is inserted into the bowl and refashion it with this, you know, pipe mortar that he's made. And people, we've talked about folks making this pipe mortar to repair pipes and a lot of stuff like that. Anyway, I think this is brilliant, you know, and so The advice is, if that's what you want to do and enjoy it, I think this is what you're going to have to do and continue to do that with your cobs. If it's me, I'm going to smoke my cob 2, 3, 4 times, and then it's going to, for me, it'll be seasoned and I'll enjoy it, and it's still going to produce that clean, you know, Missouri Meerschaum smoke that we all know and love. But, you know, you're going to have to find your way. It's the same way, you know, some people will buy a $500 pipe, and they'll season it by filling up the bowl halfway and smoking it all the way to the bottom, you know, 4 to 6 times. Mm. And then they'll consider that pipe seasoned. Some people will buy that exact same $500 pipe that an artisan made, and they'll fill the bowl with honey. And that honey, and then they'll wipe the honey out.
Right.
And then that honey has worked to, when you smoke the pipe, that honey helps create a cake.
Sure.
Now, these are two very, very radically different ways of seasoning this pipe. They're both valid.
Right.
And so you have created what you found, Gabriel, to be, you know, your solution. I think you're going to find a lot of people that are going to do exactly what you do. And a lot of people are going to be like me, and they're just going to, you know, kind of tough out the first few bowls until, you know, it tastes more like the tobacco you're smoking rather than the pipe. And then you've got the folks that are just like, it tastes fine right from the beginning. And so keep doing what you're doing and just enjoy it. Enjoy the process. That's kind of part of the pipe experience, is not just the tobacco, but all of it is tinkering. Pipe smokers love to tinker. You know, we love to just fidget with stuff. And if part of it is editing your pipe in order to, you know, make it more how you want it, Missouri Meerschaum encourages that. Look at how they've encouraged over the years all the Cobb modifications that people have done.
That's
a part of their whole deal.
It's a part of the culture around the Missouri Meerschaum pipe, I think.
It is. It really is. It's a part of it. And so that's the fun of it. Yeah. And I think you should just embrace it and roll on.
It's interesting because I'm like you. I kind of almost see it as, I think is it Birkenstocks, like the cork, like base to it?
On the bottom or whatever. And then it's like
it shapes to your foot.
Yeah.
As you wear it.
Yeah.
As you wear it. So it's instead of like, it's like, well, how do you break that in? Well, you wear it. You literally, you wear it and you walk and that's what breaks it in. And so I'm the same way with a corncob pipe. It's like, well,
how do you break it in? Well, you just
smoke it.
You just kind of smoke it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, yeah, there's a reason why. And I mean, again, that's just any pipe, but one that I've been smoking for years, you know, is a bit of a more pleasant smoke than the one that's like fresh out the box.
Yeah.
I'll smoke them both though.
I just love how people come up with their own solutions to this stuff. I mean, some people will, you know, clean their pipe by only using Everclear to clean the inside out. Some people clean a pipe by reaming it and then soaking it in rum. Like I've heard of this.
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to take a $300 pipe and dunk it in rum. I'm just not going to do that. But like,
but you could,
but you have people that do and they swear by it and it works. And it's like, man, just, you know, you figured out your way. So more power to you. I think it's great.
That's awesome, man. Well, that's a great question, Gabriel. Thank you so much for that. If you've got a pipe question for us, be sure to send it into the show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick Fire with the Squire.
Quick Fire questions!
Ow!
All right, man. Quick Fire questions. All right. We're doing this thing occasionally, not all the time, but we're doing this thing occasionally right now where I've taken from the Hogwarts house sorting hat system and I've got the question. These have been some good, thought provoking stuff.
No, they are. They're good.
All right, here we go. Here's what we got. Which of the following would you most hate people to call you? Ordinary, ignorant, cowardly, or selfish?
Wow.
I know. See, you're over here. You're laughing. Ha ha ha. These are some really good ones.
Because all of these things are, I mean, they're terrible.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, I say they are. Some people don't think it's bad to be ordinary, you know.
No, that's true.
I think cowardly. I think I would hate for people to think of me as a coward.
Yeah. Yeah. Either that or selfish for me.
Well, those are the two. Selfish was number two.
Yeah.
Selfish was number two. But I think one of those things.
put them up. I always think of the cowardly lion. From
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. Thank you. He's like, hey, put him up. The Cowardly Lion. That's good.
Oh, that's good.
All right. Given the choice, would you rather invent a potion that would guarantee you glory, wisdom, love, or power?
Wisdom?
Yeah.
I think wisdom.
That has kind of been my like constant and consistent prayer in my adult life is for wisdom. Also, love potion has connotations that I find
probably not great. Number nine. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. I would think wisdom. These are really good questions.
They are good questions. Yeah. Glory is overrated. Is kind of my
I agree
mindset there. Glory is vastly overrated. How would you like to be known to history? The wise, the good, the bold, or the great?
The good. Yeah,
John David. The good.
Definitely the good. I hope. By God's grace that my legacy is that I wasn't, you know, the best in some craft or, you know, the smartest, but that people could say that man followed the Lord and he was good.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think I'd go with the wise.
Yeah.
Bo the wise. Yeah. Anyway, there you go. All right. Well, there you go.
Good, man. I like these.
Yeah.
This is almost like a good exercise really for us to consider some of these things and answer them honestly, you know?
That's true. That's true.
Maybe I'll bring this out in therapy.
Yeah. The problem that I find with the good is, because I mean, I like where your head's at with that, but I find that like, if you leave it to history, then what is good can be like highly subjective throughout the years.
Yeah. Known to history. Now that's a good point.
Because that's the thing that
that's a good point.
So I feel
because
like,
good looks a lot different now than it did 400 years ago.
And 400 years before that. And I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, I feel like
that's interesting,
but I liked your interpretation of that.
Yeah. I see that point though.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, this is quick fire questions. If you'd like to send us some quick fire questions, please do so at show@countrysquireradio.com.
Who submitted these?
Me.
Damn it.
Hogwarts. It was I put it from the Hogwarts thing.
Okay.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback. All right, man. We got some listener feedback in from Ben Strawhan. Strawhan.
I think so.
Strawhan. Yeah. Strawhan.
Our friend Bo. Our friend Ben.
I'm your friend Bo.
Our friend Ben.
Do you have another friend named Bo?
No.
Well, there you go. Friend Ben. What did friend Ben have to say?
Bo, you are not alone in your interest with all things piratical. I've never heard that word. And nautical. I love taking my old Dominion clay pipe from Missouri Meerschaum to annual Pirate Fest. Got to go there.
Mm.
That's held where I live because what's a pirate without his pipe?
There it is.
My pirate name is Lobster Pot Larry. Our Lobster Pot Larry gets boiled alive. And my fiance goes by the name Tinker the Terrible.
Nice.
I do this in addition to practicing axe and sword combat, of which I get to take to Renaissance, medieval, and pirate fairs, along with some friends of mine.
There's a word for that. It's not lunting, because lunting is what we do. What's the arbitring? This is like a community of people that they'll dress up and they'll do sword fighting in the park and that sort of thing. And there's a term for it that I'm blanking on.
I don't know.
I remember because when I lived in Memphis, I remember we'd always drive by and they'd be out there and doing the thing. LARPing. It's LARPing. That's the word.
Is that a thing?
That is a thing.
Okay.
Live action role play, I think is what it's called.
LARP.
They would LARP. And so they would go, they would be in their character. That's why when he's referring, it's occurring to me. That's what he means by his pirate having a name. They'll go and they'll be in character. And then they'll do different kind of fights and scenes and that sort of thing. So, shout out to the LARPers
cool.
out there.
Yeah. Carrying on, he says, let's see, I was curious, does Captain Jorvik still sail the Sea of Thieves? I'd be honored to serve as part of your crew, and should you be in need of a new voice aboard the Banshee's Blade or anywhere else, I would be delighted to help however I can. I went to school for and have been working on the radio for 6 years, in addition to doing voiceovers screen and stage acting.
Okay, Ben.
Thank you so much for your time, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Kind regards from Southern Ontario, Canada, and that's Ben S.
Well, Ben, first,
cool, huh?
Let me first tell you that if you head over to findeversail.com right now, you will actually see we have, I want to say, three different characters that are yet uncast. So if you are interested in trying out for those roles, you can just email me. You can actually email show@countrysquireradio.com and just put pirate in the title. I'm sure I'll catch it.
Yeah.
Or put the pirate's daughter in the title and I'll catch it that way. And yeah, we'd love to send you a script and hear what you got. Oh, Captain Jorvik is still in the Sea of Thieves, although not as much as I used to. Just as my kids have gotten older, my time has become more limited and much to my detriment because I do keep up with my old crew. Our ship was not the Banshee's Blade. It was called the Black Rose for obvious reasons.
Oh,
for long-time
yeah, I
listeners.
Remember that. Yeah.
But the crew that my crew still goes, they still sail the Black Rose. That is still our pirate ship and everything else. And I'm more of an honorary captain whenever I join them. But I always feel bad because I'm so out of I was really good back in the day. I was in the top percentile in that game when I was playing.
That's awesome.
It was impressive stuff. So we were a notorious crew and they still are and do not need me as a captain to be successful. If anything, I hold them back whenever I sail with them. The Banshee's Blade, I'll just make mention of this real quick that he's referencing because this is interesting. The Banshee's Blade is the ship of Captain Blackstone in the Pirate's Daughter story that we're trying to tell. And during the kind of the lead up to the Kickstarter campaign, we did a kind of a mini story, kind of a mini kind of alternate reality game, ARG, where you would sign pirate articles of the crew of the Banshee's Blade. They're no longer available online, but if you had gone there, we posted it out to different things so people had the opportunity to find them. And we had literally all the pirate articles of that people would sign and read what the kind of in-universe articles were that they would signing to join on with the crew of the Banshee's Blade. And by doing so, they would start getting emails from this character we came up with called Bloody-Eyed Ben. And Bloody-Eyed Ben, my daughter actually came up with that name.
That's great.
And Bloody-Eyed Ben was kind of trying to help kind of guide them along the way as he hears that there's this treasure out there called Eversail. And so he's trying, that we had all these little lore drops and this different things on a weekly basis leading up to the Kickstarter campaign. And so it was a lot of fun. And so the Banshee's Blade that he's referencing is, is actually an in-universe ship in the story that we're hoping to tell. And wow. If you would like to hear the story of the Banshee's Blade, its captain, its crew, and their adventures, please head over to findeversail.com right now and help make this happen, because without your support, and I mean this, without your support, it will not happen. So please head over there today. Great feedback there. Appreciate that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. From Ben. But not bloody-eyed Ben, though. but another Ben the Pirate for sure. Well, man, all right. We got to talk about Blackbeard. We like closing out the Pirates and Pipe Tobacco little mini series that we kind of threw together here. I just want to say thank you for giving me a chance to like nerd out hard.
I love
for the last
it, man. It's
weeks.
Been really informative, and I think it, you know, just also showcases your skill of kind of picking apart these quote unquote histories and mythologies.
It's
and
all interwoven.
All the things.
Yeah.
These dramas. They're dramas. They are. What they are. And it's I don't know. It's been a lot of fun to follow with you. So yeah, man, it's been great.
All right, man. Well, hey, of course, if folks want to keep up with us, they can do so. They can follow us at Squire Radio, at John David Cole, at _ Country Squire Radio. They can email into the show, show@countrysquireradio.com. But all that and more can be found at countrysquireradio.com. Well, John David, are you ready to go have some adventure?
I am at the old pipe show.
Arr, well, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
Country Squire Radio, this be Bo. And that be John David Cole.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.